Zack Snyder's back with Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, a movie that I predict will not be given any Oscars. Hello, everybody. I'm Dan Merle, here with my review of Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, directed once again by Zack Snyder, with a screenplay once again from Zack Snyder, Shay Hatton, and Kurt Johnstad. We pick up after the events in Rebel Moon Part 1, which if you haven't seen, don't worry, with Sofia Boutella's Cora and her band of recruited freedom fighters returning to Velt to tell everyone the good news that Ed Skrein's evil Admiral Noble is dead and that they no longer have to fight to defend their village against the evil Empire, Imperium, and that they get to keep their precious grain. Of course, Noble isn't dead, as we learned at the end of the first movie, and soon the Imperium arrives to pick up the grain that I mentioned earlier, and that really raises the question that if the problem in the first movie was that the Imperium was going to come back to Velt to fight the villagers to get the grain, and that's what happens in this movie anyway, then why did we go through that whole circuitous thing of doing the fake death of Noble just to immediately resurrect him for this movie anyway? It's a great question, one of many that you'll have about this movie, none of which you'll get any answers to. You may think that someone who's literally back from the grave will have revenge as their motivating force, but really, I can't understate just how crucial grain is to this movie. There are two slow motion montages devoted specifically to harvesting the grain. There's a celebratory dinner after the grain is harvested, and the entire military strategy of the movie rotates upon where the grain is going to be placed. But if you've seen, well, almost any of other Zack Snyder's movies, then it probably shouldn't surprise you that grain really has no impact on the movie whatsoever. Everything else revolves around stuff that isn't grain, and it's sort of just discarded when the movie doesn't want to deal with it anymore, which again raises another question of, if you're not going to use the grain as any kind of an important factor in the endgame of the film, why devote so much of this movie to the f***ing grain? I don't know, and it's gonna keep me up at night. I guess revenge is what Noble wants. He's been resurrected and sees himself as the galaxy's savior, which is why he often poses like Jesus. But other than a slight hiccup on his way to Velt, his death doesn't really change anything about him. He is even more obsessed with Cora, also known as the titular Scargiver. If you'll recall, Cora was bodyguard to the princess who was supposed to bring peace to the galaxy before she was assassinated, and Cora fled into exile. And I bet if I gave you a million guesses as to who actually killed the princess, you would probably get it in two, maybe one. I was not a fan of Rebel Moon Part 1, as you probably know if you saw my review here on the channel, but I swear, I went into this one thinking, okay, well, you know, I didn't really like the world building in the first movie, but this is the second movie, and it leans into Zack Snyder's strength. There's going to be action and fight sequences, visuals, the stuff that he does really well and has always done really well, so I was actually a bit optimistic going into this movie. Well, as it turns out, he wasn't even really done with all of the world building, because there's a scene in this movie, and I am not making this up, where all of our characters sit around a table and take turns telling their backstories. That should have been in the first movie and not in the second movie, but that's just not how these movies operate. Is there such a thing as too much too late? 30 minutes into Rebel Moon Part 2, the warriors finally begin training the village to defend itself, and the big fight starts over an hour into the movie. But this big battle was so devoid of logic that I was actually happy that so much of it was in slow motion, because it gave me time to sit there and really think over just how dumb a lot of what was happening was. I've often said that movies have a logic of their own, and I don't really like the trend toward holding movie universes to real-world logic, because there is sort of a suspension of disbelief and an artistic license that you have to give movies, because their job is to entertain, and they don't necessarily operate by real-world rules. Well, Rebel Moon Part 2 abuses that concept so egregiously that I'm actually kind of embarrassed that I ever pushed it as an idea. For example, there are multiple scenes where the entire village is taught how to fight, and yet throughout the final battle, huge groups of them either sit around and watch our warriors being horribly mismatched against a greater number of enemies, or they just sit out the fight entirely and pop out of the ground when more folks show up as if their help wasn't needed before. As it stands, the last 45 minutes of the movie was actually quite participatory for me because I found myself yelling, "Yo, are you gonna do anything?" or "Where have you been for the last 30 minutes?" at the screen over and over again, really. This is perhaps best personified by the Imperium robot Jimmy, actual name, voiced by Anthony Hopkins. Jimmy is an extremely powerful robot who was introduced in the last movie and then just kind of wandered off. In part two, we get multiple shots of Jimmy watching the villagers like he's Batman perched above them, and yet he never actually does anything until the point where the fight would absolutely be over if he didn't step in, despite the fact that many, many people have died in the interim. I guess Jimmy's sort of like Roger Rabbit when he's handcuffed to Eddie Valiant, but he can only slip out of the cuffs when he's funny.
Do you mean to tell me that you could have taken your hand out of that cuff at any time?
No, not at any time. Only when it was funny.
Jimmy can only do something useful at the point where everyone else would die if he didn't do something. But honestly, what's the point of introducing this fucking robot if he's just gonna watch like a goon without explanation until the last useful second? I mean, it's two movies of teasing us with this robot, and then he's barely in it, and he does the bare minimum to basically not make him responsible for murder. Again, I was yelling at the screen for most of the second half of this movie, "Yo, Jimmy, are you gonna get off your robot ass at any point and help these people?" It also hurts that Korra, supposedly the best warrior in the galaxy, is exceedingly dumb in this movie. First, she almost makes a deal with Noble, who wants to kill all of her friends, until she's literally forced not to make that deal. What about this guy says to you, "Hey, I think I can trust him. He looks pretty trustworthy to me." Is it the Nazi uniform? Then a part of her plan involves taking the ship that she arrived at Velt on and stashing it so far away that she has to abandon the battle just to go back and get it instead of leaving it somewhere nearby. I mean, throw some tree branches or something on it. People do that all the time. It all builds to a super dumb climax where Zack Snyder stops halfway doing Star Wars and just decides to do Star Wars. And then we get the real crowning achievement, which is the revelation that the two movies that we've already sat through aren't even really what the main drive of this story is going to be about. This was just the background and the backstory to lay the framework for the real fight that's ahead of all of our characters. And let me tell you, viewers, if this channel was a little bit bigger or if the economy was a little bit better, I would have thrown rocks at my TV screen at the end of this movie. It's the same anger I felt at the end of Alita Battle Angel, a review I did over 5 years ago, that people still yell at me about. And when I talk about being angry that Alita, or this movie even more so, leaves things open-ended and just serves as a part of a bigger franchise, people say, "Well, what about Lord of the Rings? Those movies also left things open-ended." Well, here's the difference. Lord of the Rings was, first of all, a proven story, a proven formula. We knew that they were gonna make all three. Each one of those movies also closed the narrative threads inside of themselves, so they felt complete as their own movies, in addition to being a bigger part of the story. But first and foremost, there was a finite plan there. It's not like Fellowship of the Ring ended and people are like, "Well, when are we gonna get the rest of it?" We knew when we were gonna get the rest of those movies. Movies like this one make me so angry because they act like they are owed sequels. Their endings basically say, "Hey, you know what? None of this really counted because we're really gonna deliver the goods in the next one." But here's the thing, that's not how it works, or that's not how it should work. Audiences should decide what they get to see more of. I'm sure Zack Snyder is very happy about what he's got planned for Rebel Moon 5, but here's the problem. He forgot to make Rebel Moon's Part 1 and 2 movies that we should care about. You don't get to have your own cinematic universe just because you say loudly enough that it's going to happen. You're not Michael Scott declaring bankruptcy.
I declare bankruptcy!
Star Wars didn't end with the promise that the real fight against the Empire was coming up in the sequel. It was a movie that people loved. George Lucas and the studio saw that people loved it, and then they built out a world based on the audience's love for that and the blueprint that they'd put down for the first movie. Sure, George Lucas had a whole world planned, but he didn't make Star Wars as if it was the inevitable first chapter and leave pieces out that would only make sense if he got to make the whole trilogy. He said, "I'm gonna make the best movie that I can make right now, and if it does well, then I get to make more. That's how it should work. I guess that Rebel Moon Part 2 is technically better than the first one, but only because it has less of what I didn't like about Part 1, namely the pointless introductions of characters that I didn't care about. But it's also way dumber than the first movie, as dumb as any movie that Michael Bay has made, and that's saying a lot. And while it has its guilty pleasure moments, like the line, "The bloodlust of my ancestors still lay in those ancient gauntlets," it feels like a cinematic pyramid scheme, because after 4+ hours and 2 movies, all Zack Snyder really has is a pitch to sell us more movies. If this was just a dumb movie with some okay action scenes, I'd categorize it in the not a fan category, but for the shameless pivot into empty franchise building, I'm labeling it stay away on general principle. So those are my thoughts on Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. What do you think? Are you going to give it another shot on Netflix? I'm sure a healthy contingent of you will yell at me or maybe keep yelling at me about Alita. Let me know down in the comments below. And as always, thanks so much for watching. Be sure to stay tuned right here for more movie news, reviews, box office, and more. Until next time, stay safe, and I'll see you then. Bye.